episode 7 Decoded podcast with Chris Clough and Roland Chidiac. Chris, happy Saturday morning.
Happy Saturday, Roland. Happy to be here. Love the chat. Love our coffee talk.
I look forward to it.
It's interesting, eh? Because it still sticks with me during the week, thinking about the stuff that could make this overly simplistic and say that because of my experience, I love to share out the stories from inside the classroom. Let's simplify it down to that. But there's a level of learning for myself too, that in order for me to not just curate those stories and not just to sort of shove them on a shelf in my brain, lock the door and go, yeah, I'll get to that sometime. I think that's what this weekender has become, that opportunity to take it off the shelf before it gathers too much dust. And, you know, and I think about my context in my classroom. There's so many supplies on the shelf, so many. And I actually refer to them as ideas on the shelf to somebody talking about my teaching context. And I realize that's really almost the sadness of it, when there are so many ideas on the shelf that either there's by volume too many, or let's say by time, they're kind of covered with the forget. Yeah, that was a great idea. Why didn't I move forward with that? Or that was a resource that I started to develop. Why didn't I just like keep pushing on it? How close did I come to really making that idea something? So this weekender thing has become that for me. Before the stuff gets filed away on the shelf, before it gets covered over in the next week's worth of stuff, I think that one of the bits of source code that's emerging about this weekly for you and I, besides the sharing of our very different contexts and just the idea of two different communities having something to talk about, it's the getting to the idea and kind of messing with it a little bit before it becomes part of the wallpaper. So I'm so appreciative of our weekend get-togethers. I really am.
I like the way you put that. For me, it's a great way to reflect on the week. It's a great way to connect with someone else who doesn't share the same experience. And so listening to your thoughts and reflections on what you've experienced in combination with my lived experience is such a valuable undertaking. And I'm glad that you can carve time out for it. And we literally carve time out. Like, it's early in the morning before our days kind of get going with the family. But it's a nice way to start the day. I mean, I'm up already, right? So might as well make the most out of my time before we get to like laundry and sports and prep meals and all kinds of stuff, right?
Yeah, and I also, you know, whatever... It's kind of cool that we can refer to previous episodes, right? That kind of allows other people when they listen to drill down, oh, I got to go back and listen to episode 3 when they talked about this because they made that passing reference. But that still that quote, it's hanging with me, dude. You know, the time I had is what I gave to it. And this is that moment. So I'm saying, and we did this just before we hit record. And it's almost like, I think this is where there's that value in... that all of a sudden decide to go to video, but they basically, from the moment that the individuals walk into the studio, they hit record. And then what they do is they say, you know, as you're watching, you're like, okay, we're in the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then you hit record. So you can actually see just a little bit of that rough space just before the polished record button hits. Now, I don't think there's too much. And I find you and I are getting going good. Yeah. Like, it was the week. Yeah. We kind of do the chat. Like, let's hit record. Okay. Let's do it. If you're to that authentic, like, we're meeting, let's get recording. Let's just get to the talk. You and I have rapport, and it's always great to just do that little stuff off camera or off tape. But I love the fact that we're getting closer and closer to just let's get talking, because I feel like in any second I'm going to have something to talk about.
So. I get it. And speaking of hitting record, for anybody who's listening that has listened to past episodes that have noticed there's been some audio difficulty, I apologize for that. It's one of those things where like this whole process is constantly flawed. Like there's no smooth operation, no matter in my personal experience with the podcasting, whether I've used Google Hangouts, Zencastr, whatever, there's always an issue. And it used to really upset me. Now I just move on. So if you're listening to an episode and all of a sudden you hear aliens or we both cut out, there's nothing I can do about it. Like I remember the first episode we cut together, Chris. And do you remember how all the audio was off? I told you it was all off and I couldn't fix it. And then eventually what the deal was it was about time. And I needed like a good solid hour to play with the audio. And eventually I got to that hour and I just messed around and I fixed it as best as I could. But this is one of those things where you've got two teachers, two parents get together. We chat it out. We try to break things down in the work we do or make them more complicated. That's kind of our tagline. And then we put it out there for people. And so you might come across audio that's just no good. And I am sorry about that, but that's the nature of this beast. Hopefully there's more good audio than bad. And I think there has been, but I don't know what to tell you. And I give this the time that I have for it. And then I move on to other things. So there's not much more to say.
Well, I'll add something to it is that, you know, I think one of the switch ups that you and I landed on with this is the possibility of people listening live. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the time we've picked is obviously convenient to us. It works with our life. If we were looking to market this widely, we may drop this more in the middle of the day and say, hey, come on out, or, you know, after we've done bedtime routine. But here's the truth about our contexts. This is the moment that we got. Number two, okay, so audio gets dropped. There could be some of the wateriness that we've had, like you said, aliens. And that really is, neither one of us are putting cash into professional studios with dedicated bandwidth. So anything, you know, my kids wake up and they're sucking bandwidth, right? Or if there's like a rainy a storm outside, that's messing with bandwidth. So these elements I love add organic layers to this conversation. And you know, I've played, I can do, I enjoy creating story when I have 10 hours to shape a podcast and I can do that intro song and I can make sure that the levels are nice and smooth and that I have that end music just creep in somewhere around the closing big idea. And then it crescendos at the, thanks for being on the podcast. It was wonderful. The artificiality of it. And that's okay too, because that's what you do as a storyteller. But you can also tell stories in the moment. And I feel like that's what you and I are doing here. And if the audio happens to be a little glitchy, that's part of the story. And if, you know, someone's watching our video and it's like, why does Clough's face keep freezing? His hand is frozen in front of the screen. I can't see his face, right? So, but that's the space that we're in. All of this, I realized this morning, I had no idea. Actually, I'll back this up. So I had mentioned about, I've had some really great feedback about my EdCan talk. I've had people reach out, you know, very similar to what you shared with me, just about that it was a good share. In a lot of different shapes, but it was a good share. And one of the conversations that happened at that network meeting was around, you know, when you start a task, to project yourself, when you start a task and you start to think just because you want to project where the space is you'll land in from that task. When I first listened to your podcast with Stephen Hurley over a year ago, there was no thing like I was going to meet you. I was even going to get into the EdCan network. there was no thing where I was going to be able to speak at a PK and sort of like share these stories. There was none of that. So part of what you and I are doing right now with this almost like a rough cut, like what's this going to lead to? Like, cause no matter how much of a, let's say a divergence it is from what you and I have done previously with podcasts, it's still another chapter in that story of you and I learning and sharing stories. And I think that's kind of crucial for anyone that's listening in, that that's what this is about. It's like intentional interruption that we talked about last week, but also just being open to kind of switching it up and saying what I'm learning in this new format. I'm learning and I'm loving it as a kind of like a next step from what I was doing previously with my podcast.
You said a bunch of things there that I'd love to hit on that I won't, but around back to the audio issues and like, I hear what you're saying about the creation of the bumpers and getting the music just right as it enters in, enters out. Like in our last episode, I found some music that I wanted to put into the podcast because I felt like it touched upon kind of who you and I are at this moment in time on our life journey. And it just wasn't working. Like I was doing different things with the music, trying to grab it off the net, trying to cut it up, and it just wasn't working. So I just didn't have any music in the last episode because it's like, no, this is what I want. I can't have it right now. And I'm out of time. I've given a ton of time. I'm out. I got to go. I'm not going to mess around. And then I just pushed it out there with no music. And here's the thing about that. So to some people, that looks like shoddy work. It looks like being a slacker. I get it. I'm past that though. And it's because, like we've said in a past episode, we've both gone through that process. We both understand how to do things, how it works. We're just getting to the heart of the matter as best as we can. And this reminds me of the way I operate in my classroom. My classroom by far is not one of the prettiest classrooms. And I used to have major issues with that. Like it was an internal battle inside of me on how do I make my classroom look good? And the answer to that is you either pretend you're somebody else and you take up a lot of time trying to mimic something because you don't have it within you to create something fresh and that meets your standard. So I kind of went through that a bit. Not too long though, because thankfully I snapped out of that and I realized quickly that it's not about how the room looks. Like it's important for the kids to be comfortable. It's important for the kids to feel good in their environment, their workspace. But ultimately, the things that are on my walls are there to help with the student learning, ultimately. So when I put their work up, I try to put it up there in a really like a simple geometric form so that it's all there. It doesn't look, you know, uneven on the walls. So I do my best to like make things symmetrical, make things look okay. But why am I putting this stuff on the wall? I'm putting it on the wall because I want to celebrate student work, or I want to provide my students with models for them to reflect on and to think about, and maybe to add to their work, or to decide that those types of things aren't for them and they move on to something else. So it's just funny because at this point in my podcasting experience, I don't really care what's on the wall. It's there for a purpose. You and I are reflecting. We're figuring things out. We're learning new things. Hopefully other people can benefit from it. But like, and I even hate to say I don't care, but I'm saying it. I don't care what's on the wall. Like if you text me this week and you say, hey, dude, next week, can I work on the music bumpers or something for the podcast? My response will be, awesome. Go for it. Can't wait to see what you do. But if I don't get that text from you, I'm probably not going to spend the time doing that. You know, I could see eventually I might want to do that just to do something different here to kind of just freshen things up from my perspective and keep me in tune with what's happening. But I just don't care. Like, and you know what? I talked to my kids about this at the beginning of the year. I said to them, what do you want for this classroom? Like, how do you see this space? Because we're here every day. Like, we don't have the luxury of working in different environments within the building. We just don't. Like, we can go to Learning Commons as often as they'll let us. We can work in the hallways. We can try to find an empty space somewhere and like adopt it every now and again for our learning or our demonstration of learning. But generally speaking, this room is the room where that's been given to us to do our thing. And I don't want to be in a space every day, all day, but this is the space. So what do you want from this space? And I had different kids say different things. Some of them would like more color around them and a variety of work that they can look at and kind of like be proud of. And then other kids said that they have never really considered it and they just don't care. And some kids said that too much everywhere is too much for them. They can't handle it. They don't know where to go. They don't know what to do. So we've kind of designated different parts of the room for the different purposes. And it's been nice. And it's kind of, I'll say to the kids, like, okay, we have this work and I'm really proud of what you've done and I want to put it up. I want it up. So where are we going to put it? Does anybody have any ideas? Like, I'm opening it up to you. I want to know from you what you think before I just make the decision. And okay, here's a good one. This week we were working on writing very short Halloween spooky stories. That was the goal. And they were supposed to be like one paragraph, no more. So very quick and dirty work with paragraphs, but with a little bit of fun with the whole Halloween idea and concept. And as we were getting through this, the kids were like, are we posting this? Are we going to put this up? And I said, yes, we're going to put this up, but it's not going to stay up very long because I don't want to be that guy that has Halloween stuff up in the middle of November. Like, it just doesn't sit well with me. And they agree. So they said, okay, well, we're really happy with this work. So we want it to be displayed. Like, we want to publish the work. And I said, well, like, does it have to be on the wall? Like, can I get audio of you reading your spooky story? And we could put together a podcast and we can have spooky music. We can have Halloween music and we can have you reading your paragraph. And then we can push it out to the world. And whoever wants to listen to our Halloween stories on Halloween or before or after, it's there. It exists. It's always going to be there. And they looked at me with such excitement and they said, we've never done something like that before. So let's do that. Let's publish our work in a way where people don't see it. People just hear it. And I said, yeah, I'm all over that. Like, that's my bread and butter. So I'm more than happy to accommodate. I'm more than happy to support and guide. So we started yesterday. We carved time out in the day. And we connected it to media literacy and oral communication and writing. So there's the curriculum component. And my class, for the first time in a long time, sat there as an audience as students would come up to the front of the room. They would sit at the main table. I would put my device on in front of them. I'd hit record. And they would perform for their audience. And then at the end, when I would hit stop, the audience would clap and then tell the reader what they thought of their work. They'd give them 2 stars and a wish, 2 things that they thought went really well, and then something that they wondered about or wished that could happen, would happen, might happen. And we got through, like, you know, 3 or 4 of them because we didn't have a lot of time. But the experience is so amazing, right? And it's like, anybody who comes into my room at that time will see that there's learning happening. They will see that there's demonstration of learning. They will see descriptive feedback. They will see models and exemplars, right? They will see learning goal. They will see success criteria. It might not be on my wall in the prettiest form, but it's happening. It's happening. So, and I'm pretty confident that my principal knows that and she's not concerned, but it's just for me. It's for it's for my practice. It's for the optics in my room. I do want my kids to feel good about their environment. I do want them to be proud of their room, where they work, where they operate. But it's going to have to come a lot from them because I don't have that side of me. That's not one of my strengths. And I used to really worry about that, but I don't anymore. And I think part of me talking about it today is a way to kind of let it go some more by putting it out there and just saying it's not my gift. So if you're going to come to my room and visit, it's not going to be an all-star visual arts room. That's not what I'm about. That's not what I do. But if you pay attention and you ask the kids questions, I'm confident that they will tell you what's going on, how it operates, and that they have a say in it.
Yeah, I can remember that's, well, I totally get it. I totally get that curve. And we talked about the apprenticeship curve before, that idea that in the beginning, you come into whatever your trade is or your vocation, and you come in with a ton of stuff. And sometimes that ton of stuff that either you want to do, you want to experience, you want to connect, you want to do all these things, it can become the distraction from where your heart is. And as you come around that curve of apprenticeship and you come towards a journey person and you look to simplify, I think that two things happen. You physically simplify. So you're actually becoming, let's say, more minimalistic in the stuff. But I think another part is you're no longer seeking permission to be minimalistic because you understand the shortcuts. You understand self. You understand the community. You understand your pedagogy. So there's a natural curve to, I was like this when I started, but now, you know what? I think I can get to the same experience with whatever your community is with less distraction. Different on-ramps, maybe shorter on-ramps, maybe more interesting on-ramps. So I think a lot about in my classroom design, I come at it sort of from out in the universe. I don't have as good of a concrete kind of stepping stone that you laid down. And I appreciate that because I think for many instructors to sort of hear that transition to get to the experience is important. And I love how you laid that one down because it is about experience. And if you dare to walk into your space and try and make it from, well, see, I'm blocking the camera again, as I talk with my hands. If you dare to walk into a classroom and measure the experience from what you're feeling standing in the doorway, then you're not close enough to the experience. So someone standing watching a classroom in motion and saying things like, wow, it looks really messy, or it looks disorganized. Well, I would say to someone that never watched soccer before and saw, you know, a bunch of, you know, JK aged kids playing soccer, and all it is a mob chasing a ball. If you would ask the kids, what are you doing? They would say, we're playing soccer. They're in the experience by their definition. You ask a coach that's sort of teaching high rep or coaching high reps, that's not soccer. that's like something else. It's sort of like way back. So I like to think of that, the individual, that sage that walks into your classroom and somehow what's going on, but doesn't have the experience to speak from inside out in relation to what your experience. And then I shift over to me and I start with a question. Does every inch of this classroom have to be for learning? And I never really get to a good answer, but I can't, like, it's, you ever had those questions that you don't walk away from just because you don't get an answer? Like, I don't get any answers that I understand out of this. It's one of the short list of powerful source code provocations that drive design of my pedagogy and the spaces that I learn in, because I'm more and more seeing shifting to include elements that, one, don't look like typical or accept as the canon of the classroom, the row on row seating, the teacher standing at the front. We're in the midst of this shift. It's very ambiguous right now. But that's just the teaching and learning style. What about the activities that are now being included? So you may have phys ed activities done right in the classroom, or you may have mindful moments right in the classroom. Heck, you have snack right in the classroom. So this multimodal type of learning space has already started that conversation, but I don't know specific question that would lead to larger structural change. As in, do we have to commit every inch of a classroom to learning? And I had some interesting pushback from when I posted this one out and I've been in conversations to say, well, isn't all, everything that happens in a school, isn't learning always? Maybe. But, you know, there was a brilliant conversation that was going on, I think, between Aviva Dunziger and Andrew Campbell a few tweet months back about play and learning. And what seemed to land on is that play is accidental. That may result in learning. Learning is intentional, sort of a drive to it. And we can apples and oranges it, but if you're designing a space that allows for both, I think that that's how room looks. I've also been watching, have you heard of The Minimalists?
I have, yes.
So I take a lot of, I've taken a lot of kind of cues from their philosophy to sort of, I don't find their philosophy, their approach necessarily inspires me, but I take the approach of, you know, 10 necessary pieces for a thing as a removing the clutter so that it's more likely that something creative or interesting can happen. So in my classroom, I try to have all the sort of regular cues of color and anchor charts and the stuff that would sort of work regardless of the student or the person that walks in, and open to the fact that it's temporary. It's a minute. What kind of a room would I have to have in order to be able to adjust to minute climate changes? So it's, again, you know, and I just wrote down, does every inch of a classroom have to be dedicated to learning? And I just put below it, this teacher. Or is it dedicated to the child or the student? Or is it dedicated to the community? And I think I kind of exist in that Groundhog Day when I try and think about difficult. It's really difficult to make decisions about how you're going to adorn your classroom, because as soon as you adorn your classroom, you anoint it with a specificity. This is the art corner. This is the reading corner. This is the decompression corner or your quiet corner. And like I said, minute-to-minute changes, mobile learning, you know, sort of the idea that your classroom's multimodal. Are we agile enough to keep up with the changing classroom so that the look is responsive?
I have to say, Chris, that I have to make it clear that I am interested in the whole minimalism movement, but I am not minimalizing my classroom. I'm simply acknowledging that I don't have the gift to make it what other people have made theirs. That's like, I want to be clear that I don't consider myself a creative person that way. I just don't. Now, I could put the time and energy into becoming more creative, but I would say that at this point in my career, at this point in my everyday life, I'm not going to give the time to that is required to make that happen. I'm not, because my time is better spent, in my opinion, learning other things and doing other things. So I feel like I need to be clear. I do enjoy the minimalism aspect of it. Like, I once had an educational assistant walk into my room years ago and say, oh, Johnny's going to love this room because there's nothing here to distract him, because he was on the spectrum. And she was so pumped to be working in the room. And I took that as an insult. I was like, oh my God, she's saying that my room is not visually attractive, right? But it's taken me years to just realize, no, she was just saying that for the student she works with that was going to be in my room for a full 10 months was going to be fine. She didn't have to worry about that aspect of my room because it wasn't there. It doesn't exist. And so that was years ago, and I reflect on that a lot. But today, I know how I am. I know that if I want to change, I can. It's going to take time and energy, and I'm not willing to give it the time and energy that it would need. So I just wanted to put that out there. I really love your idea about the minute-to-minute changes, and are we flexible enough? Are we skilled enough to roll with the punches and be able to do those things? And that's something that I'm going to ponder this week. And then the point you made about who are our classrooms for? Are they for the students? Are they for the community? Are they for us? Who are they for? So that's another good one that I really will take with me. Things to consider for sure. And hopefully people listening are considering that with their own experience. If they're in education, if they're not in education, then it's kind of a neat little look into one part of what we do as educators, because we do have to maintain our learning space. We do have to maintain and take care of the space that we use every day. About the talk that you did, the EdCan talk, I really I'm connecting with the part in your talk where you discuss the resources in the room and how your room is loaded with resources and they're all just sitting there waiting, but you may not use them because they might not fit your need at the time, and how you go looking for what you need. And that's come up for me a lot this week, particularly because I had a lot of colleagues come into my room this week and say, hey, do you have the such and such resource? And if you do, can I grab it? And I would say, yeah. And I'd take them back to the shelf where I've got some of those things. And I'd literally be digging for them because there's so many things piled on top or beside them. And then pull it out, give it to them and say, see, I told you, I know exactly where it is, but I don't need to do anything with it right now. So that's why it's hiding in this little space here, which is neat because for them, it's like, I need it now. For them, it's, you know, it's center on the desk. It's at the top of everything. It's like it stands out and it glows. And for me, that resource is buried under a ton of other things. But I know exactly where it is so that if I need to get it, I know where to go and grab it. And after I did that, I grabbed a math resource that I needed to bust out for my kids. It's a Marion Small book, and I don't remember the title at the moment, but it's got a lot of learning prompts inside of it, a lot of, it's differentiated instruction for mathematics. So I was working on a problem, and I was really racking my brain. I said, why am I going nuts here? Marion Small can help me. That's what she does. So I pull it out, and there it was right on my computer table underneath the document camera, front and center. And even the kids, they're like, what is that? What are we doing with that? I said, oh, you wait. I'm going to drop a couple of questions for you, and I'm going to make sure that the questions I provide will allow every single one of you to enter into this topic, enter into this conversation, enter into this learning. And you know what? They were really excited about that. I think they're starting to feel like, hey, this guy does care. This guy does provide us with different ways to enter into our learning. And I'm not saying I'm perfect at that, but I am not. But at least I'm trying. I'm growing. That's where I'm putting my time, right? Instead of drawing something beautiful to put on the wall, I'm looking for my Marion Small book so I can help my kids with their math learning. And I got to jump in and say that the point about is everything we do at school about learning? Is every space in our rooms about learning? And I have to say, I'm going to take a stand on this, and I'm going to say, for me, it is. For me, it is. No matter what we're doing, no matter how much fun we're having, I try to get the kids to connect that fun, whatever they're doing, back to something that we've done at school. So even when they bring in their own stuff and they're doing like their own makerspace type stuff in a corner, I'll say, what you're doing here is really cool. I can see the science. Do you see any of the science in what you're doing here with what we've talked about with forms of energy? And I don't hound them, but I just throw it out there. And then they either give something back or they don't. But for me, I feel like I'm responsible for helping them make that connection to become aware, because for me, awareness is important. So I want them to be aware that what they're doing in the corner, they're applying something that they've learned with me, or that they've learned along the way from their own research at the school, or a project they did last year with another teacher. Like, that awareness, it's important to make those connections for me. So that's something that I'm constantly doing. So for me, the answer is yes. Everything we do at school during that time, I try to connect to some kind of prior knowledge that has come from me or from somebody else, or just for them to become aware of what's going on, what they're doing, and how it connects to their learning.
I wrestle with it, and I appreciate that, because I think that taking a stand on it, it is important, especially to start conversation and to start some reflective practice, because then you move from, I think I can take this as a truth for me in education. I think as long for me, I could take a stand on it, and I think that I would fall in step with you. But I also, in that exact same moment, I realized that the question in itself is meant to be a provocation and not an absolute. There's no equal sign on the end of this. So when I think about, does the every inch of a classroom have to be dedicated to learning, then I start rearranging kind of Sudoku style the words and the question to sort of get to some deeper layers to it. So, you know, then I would kind of come down to the, well, what is learning? And then what is the idea of dedicating spaces within a classroom? And then as far as the decision of being able to measure space as well. So every inch, I load it up saying, like, my question is front end loaded, as in the assumption that, you know, most people would say, yes, every inch has to be for learning. And this was some of the pushback that I got in the conversation, is then, well, learning is, it happens naturally, it happens anyways. Of course, learning happens in the classroom. This as a reflective tool, I'm going to say more about the decisions and the resources that I use in the classroom. And am I aware of the temporary nature? Am I aware of connection, as in, are the things on the wall and in the room and the activities, are they still connecting with the kids? And also, does it inspire growth and the future? To a certain degree, those artifacts that are, when they become an artifact and not a tool, then I would question for me whether or not I'm moving learning forward. So layers upon layers upon layers of things, or stacks upon stacks upon stacks of things. Things you have in the room, if part of their intention is to inspire learning, then for me, it's about questioning, what is the shelf life? Staying on that edge. I'll never forget, in my practice teaching year, I worked with a spec ed teacher as part of my practicum, through OISE. So you did two practicums, and then the final practicum, you got to choose. You had what is it that you wanted to be in? So I did my first two practicums in the kitchens. But then my final one, and it was transformational, I worked with this teacher, Lee Haynes, and she shadowed, basically. That's what it was like. I got to teach spec ed. And I'll never forget standing with her in her and everything that I'd been taught so far at faculty was about organization, hands down, organization, and methods of organization, and then methods of other people understanding your organization. So you get that hyper focus on, do you actually have your binders? You know, how good are your binders? And she said to me, she said, would you like to try teaching the lesson today. And so I'd already been in there for a week. I'm like, sure, let me try. I'm gonna try and follow your lead, try and do some things myself. And we had been doing a unit with Hotel Rwanda as the focus on it, looking at human rights, looking at global goals before that was actually jargon, and using the movie and General Dallaire as a real life Canadian at the heart of this. Okay. And she said, okay, I have a handout that you could start with. You could have a look over. And no word of a joke, she's maintaining eye contact with me. And she takes her hand and shoves it behind her into the stack of papers. Like, her desk was notoriously messy. She usually left enough space on her desk for her coffee cup. Okay. And she reaches, just narrowly avoids the coffee cup. No joke. It just breezed past the top of it. She reaches into the stack of paper, comes out, and she's holding the handout. The dude never broke eye contact with me. Now, this is a really radical, kind of strange thing. She might have been tapping around a little bit. Maybe it was more on the top. But the fact of it is that she knew where it was in that stack was mind-blowing to me, because it said a whole bunch of things. One, that she was a bit of a ninja. Like, that was my first thing. Like, how does anybody do that? How was that even in there? Like, what? Like, because I look at it and all I see is the stack of papers. Now, there was some, you know, you start to look just a little bit deeper. Look, okay, like, maybe that is a stack. It's sort of askew, but maybe that is one unit there. Oh, there is a bull clip around it holding together. Okay, I can see a couple different colors. But at first blush, it's just a mass of papers. So first, she's a ninja. Two, that there is an actual method of organization. But three, also that the lesson is broader than any handout. Because as she actually handed me the thing, I realized I was really appreciative of having kind of like a guide space. I didn't have to use the guide. It was good that she got it for me, and it was good that she found it. And it was great that if, you know, put it back in the stack, there was no way I was going to do that. But it made me think about that. Like, that there is a there's a time and place, time and place and reason for having resources. That messy desk was in her own space. So I was in her mind. So if this is her mind, she has to be allowed to have her stuff that way. And it also, you know, fourth and finally, it kind of gave me permission that it's okay to be kind of messy, because she's a damn good teacher. She connects with the kids. Her lessons get in their heads. They appreciate their time around her. And, I think those are good barometers of success, that you're actually designing good classroom experiences. But I'll never forget that. You made me think of that when you found the math textbook, sort of in a space. It's like you found treasure. It's like reaching into your pocket after you've done laundry and finding that $5 bill. Like, that is so awesome. Just when I needed it.
Yeah. It's when you talk about the messiness of some and the non-messiness of others, it just reminds me of the importance of not always judging people or situations or environments before you get more of a feel for what's going on. And I say that now because I'm sitting here talking to you, but I've walked into offices and classrooms and seen what looks like a bomb went off. And I'm like, whoa, what's going on here? But that's an initial reaction that I think is kind of built into people. And it takes somebody thinking, purposely thinking about what they're thinking, to realize that, whoa, I should just, you know, not be so quick to judge here and see what's going on. And I love your story, because I think we all know an educator who may have a desk or a place in the room where there is, like, it looks like somebody just took a trash can and turned it over, but they know exactly where things are, what they need, when they need it, they can grab it. And I love the, there was a bit like the way you described your experience, it felt like it was like out of a movie, you know, the master teaching the apprentice and able to, like, defy knocking over the full cup of coffee on all these papers and not losing eye contact. Like, I wrote down here that Chris talks about learning spaces that we work in, and the purpose, as well as his experience working with teachers who know, in quotations, their craft, apply their own flow, and are organized in their own way. Like, so as you're talking, this is what I'm getting from it. And it's so true that we all have We all have a way of being organized. We all have, and some of it looks really nice and some of it doesn't look nice at all. And I'm sorry, I'm going back to, it has to do with how you feel about what you're doing. It has to do about how you feel about yourself, and it has to feel about what you are okay with presenting to others and what you are not okay with. So I will say that right now in my room, I've got some spaces in the room that they break my heart. Like when I look at my table with the computer, there are papers all over it for a variety of different reasons, but it can't stay like that for more than a couple of days. It starts to upset me. And so I start to tidy it up. I start to pile things in organized ways and then find homes for them because I don't want them out anymore. Or when the French teacher's coming in to do planning time and I'm leaving, I do my best to provide empty space for that educator so he can do what he needs to do, or he can have his own space where he can make his own mess, or you know, create his or own organization at that time and moment. So I get it. I've had principals. Principals' offices are the best. I wish I could put together a quick book of all the principals in my board. This would be my book. It would be a photographic images of their desk with maybe one or two quotes underneath the picture. And guaranteed, some desks will be spotless. A laptop and a mouse and maybe a notepad. And then some desks look like a bomb went off in the room and there's stuff everywhere. And I would just love to be able to sneak in, grab a shot, and then say, what's going on in here? What's this all about? And I have to tell you that I could generalize my experiences with those two types of administrators based on the desk and what's on or what's not on the desk. I can generalize. I'm not going to right now because my mom told me that if you don't have something nice to say, don't say it at all. So I'm not going to go there right now. But I can make a generalization and share some experiences. But that's something that you and I could talk about off air.
It's a I love your example. And because you start to broadcast that, what you see is only a part of the whole person. I mean, that's what it comes down to. When you look into the classroom, it's only a part of the whole experience. If you're looking at a specific person's desk or a specific person's learning space, you know, if I can, well, I'll do it right now. So here's the space that I'm doing this podcast in. So I have a bunch of creative stuff over here. I've got like Marvel stuff up on the wall. You know, there's the clock to track the time. So here's my Star Wars thing. And then I've got a whole shelf of stuff, you know, the laptop and even over my shoulder. Like that's just a beautiful mess back there. Like that's my kids' creative space. That's their maker table. So part of it is, you know, here's the deal on that. I know full well that if anybody were to just watch that video flowing around my space, it's highly likely that at least a few people go, holy crud, that's messy. They need the audio to fulfill the broader picture. Then they need to get to know me and my practice to understand why that space is important. Then they need to be in the space and see if what their emotional connection, what their productive connection is, what their sort of like moment to moment reactions are to the space to figure out whether or not they really want to say that's not an effective space. And those things have to happen frequently, I think, in learning spaces. I think that often we don't get to those moments. There's a certain packaging that we present. And often there can be some fear too. You know, it's funny in the class right now, I used to use a bunch of old literacy documents and textbooks that were just dead to me as my standing desk. And people were really conflicted with looking. I think I posted a picture of last year, and there's textbooks. I liked it because they were so beautifully colored. Like, ministry documents are just about the right thickness, about 3/4 to an inch each thick, nice sturdy paper. And the binding, the spine, usually has a stripe of color. So you stack like 20 of them up, beautiful to look at, and then other textbooks. But I had people kind of conflicted like that, like somehow I was ripping a dollar bill in half. Like, that's blasphemy. Why do you have books as a desk? I'm like, I've anointed them with purpose. Prior to that, they were just gaining dust. They were that handout in the middle of the stack that my former colleague, Lee Haynes, I have reached into that stack and I have made them beautiful again. And they had a hard time kind of wrestling with that. It's like, but they're textbooks. I'm like, I know. And look how well they're holding up my monitor. That's what I need them for. Right? It's funny. I don't use that anymore. I've actually moved to a different standing desk, but I keep those books on the shelf, and I'm considering whether or not to put a little sign on this. You know, this is the stack formerly known as my monitor thing, you know, like what its previous purpose was. I think what's really important, and it's funny, it just to kind of, I guess, my close on this is that if you are anointing spaces in your classroom, here's where the what's can be really powerful is if you are capturing your evolution. We've done that with our learning space under the hashtag We Are Access. So there's a ton of pictures that are specifically, you can look at the evolution of the space from the beginning of last September, so 16-17 school year, and see how we've progressed and how things have moved and the color scheme and how the tables have moved around, like how we've been responsive to those minute-to-minute changes. So, yeah.
I bet that if we went upstairs in your house, things might look a little bit different than your makerspace podcasting area. And I think it lends, your example lends itself well to the saying that there's a time and place for everything, right? So the room I'm in right now, I'm not going to show it to you, but there's an exercise machine in here. There's a TV, there's a computer. There's some furniture that we put in here because there's nowhere else to put it. Like, it's just one of those rooms. My wife hates this room because it's not organized in a particular way. It's not dedicated to anything in particular. It's just like a be-all, end-all room. And if you look right over here, it's a calendar that I was given at Christmas time. And it's one of those cool Star Wars cartoon calendars that I just have there because I like it. It's funny. It reminds me of what day I'm at and where I'm going and where I've been. So it's just one of those rooms. But there's a time and place for it. And what you said, and I think we can end it here. It's a nice way to go. I wrote down that you're talking about anointing your workspace and being responsive to the minute-to-minute stuff. And I think that's important. I think that your space is what you make it, and it will shift. Things will change depending on the flavor of that week, of that day, of that hour. And I think being responsive is key. And I think people, when you are being responsive, then you're showing that you're not stuck. Like, you're moving. You're constantly moving. It just may not always appear that way. And I think that's important because when people move, they usually make progress. It doesn't have to be perfect, but you're moving, right? You're in some kind of flow. And whether you're going, even if you're going backwards, you'll eventually figure out that, whoop, I'm going the wrong way. I need to pivot and start moving in whatever direction is the right way. So again, Chris, thanks for that little tidbit. Do you have any last words before we go?
Yeah, just if probably this week, I'm gonna chat it up with people about somewhere around the intentionality or the accidentiality about their room design. And you know, you kind of identified the heartbreaker space that you think it needs something. Might not be you that does it. It might just be something happens, like, that's the thing. That's what that missing piece was. So I'm gonna see if I can connect with some colleagues this week and talk about that a little bit about how their room design. And just only because I had them, sorry, I went off camera there for a second. Last year, I came across two really great resources to talk about as a teacher. And it was this one right here. So it's called The Third Teacher. Cool book. And it gives a ton of data-driven examples of how different jurisdictions use design to help improve learning spaces. And then this one right here, which is called Make Space. And Make Space is like a recipe book, as in you want to know how to build stools for your space. It says that you want to learn how to build partitions. Some of the philosophy, how you bring the elements of design to a philosophical level so that you can kind of bring life or allow life to flourish in your classroom. So Make Space and The Third Teacher. I've really loved those books as far as opening up my mind to how learning spaces don't have to look like a classroom.
Two great resources for people to check out if they feel like, you know, they need to go that way. How did this talk turn into one about our learning spaces and making sure that they are, I guess, conducive to learning or having fun or whatever? I'm just reflecting on our brief texts the other day about where we wanted to go with this podcast today, and we totally did not go anywhere near the direction that we had kind of thought about going. But that's cool. Like I don't get a chance to talk about this stuff often. It was fun, and I wonder what next podcast will bring.
We'll just call it a podcastable moment. Right?
Right.
Let's move through the. I feel like I learned something today.
Well, I definitely did. I definitely did. And even if I didn't, it was great to chat with you as always.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So, are we out?
Our days? I'm going to hit stop now. Mm-hmm. And then maybe we can connect for one more minute after we're done. And hopefully this audio has been decent. And I know you'll let me know, Chris, because you listened to the whole thing. I've lately just been spot checking the audio. But because you know what? I think if I listen to the whole thing after I post it, it's going to upset me. So I just won't. I'll let you piss me off.
All right, man.
Okay. See ya.
Not soon.